are now about to witness the strength of geek knowledge.
I geek out about TV shows. I geek out about music. Star Wars, of course. Fantasy stuff, Lord of the Rings. Star Wars, of course. God geek.
We are back. God Geeks, you know where to find us. iTunes, wherever. We've been gone for a couple weeks, but you're back. We're back. Everything is right.
Don't act like y'all weren't on vacation, too.
You were, too. Yeah. So, Bill, while we were gone, though, you launched your album finally.
I was not on vacation.
You were not. You were busy. I was on vacation. You were busy. New album, BillBrymer.com. Folks at home can download it. You can buy it at iTunes.
It's free on my website.
Free on the website. And, of course, you can donate to Bill Brymer's ministry.
It wasn't free for me to make. But.
Right. So, you know, come on. Support him.
Yeah.
And then, of course, on Spotify, too. That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't
Spotify,
realize
that. iTunes, all the... anything digital, it's out there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yay. Yeah. Okay. So, I hear it's good. I have to listen to it soon.
Hey,
but
no obligation. Yeah. We are going to talk about...
I'm going to get the free one. I'm not buying it, though.
Right. There you go. And then you can donate.
Okay, there we go.
Or you can buy a t-shirt.
I'll get a t-shirt.
T-shirt or a hat.
Bumper stickers?
I do have stickers.
Yay,
yeah,
I like stickers.
Have stickers.
All right,
yep.
Cool.
And all that money goes to making more free music.
Can get that stuff on the website, too?
You can.
Yay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. You can do all of that on BillBrymer.com. You can order a t-shirt or a hat or... a sticker and support it that way, or make a donation, support it that way, or just take it and don't make a donation. It doesn't make any difference to me. It's free.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. Be blessed by it. We're going to talk about music. We're not going to talk about my album specifically.
No, but music in general.
Yeah, but music in the church and music and theology and music and art and theology and all that
stuff
in Jedi Mind Treks. And then, of course...
we have to.
The Game of Thrones finale, this last season, the payoff season.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that in This Week in Geek.
Yep.
So this is a good episode. This is a great way to come back from kind of a two-week hiatus.
Yeah.
But
and then next week, I want to talk about Stranger Things, which premieres tonight.
Okay.
Or today, if you're listening on Friday. It's out there on Netflix. Maybe watch an episode or two. So, because we're going
to
talk about it
next
week. Yeah, don't binge watch.
We're not going to binge. We're making.
Okay, I won't binge.
James will probably.
I'll try not to. But that might be a show we talk about. And then Westworld's
coming. Just heard his confession
too.
Right there. So
yeah.
He's going to binge.
I am going to.
All right, let's get into it.
I don't believe it.
That is why you fail. You must unlearn what you have learned.
All right, Jedi Mind Tricks time, and I think we've got a good one today. We're going to talk music, because Bill just had an album come out. We won't talk about his album specifically, but be sure to download it. There is a Christ Hold Fast podcast that just dropped that's all about it, so we're going to let them do that part, but we're going to talk music, and I got questions. And normally in this part of the podcast, we talk about how theology and life intertwine, how they, you know, theology is life, is reality. And we're going to talk about art in general, but specifically music. So I guess my first question, Bill, is there a distinction between sacred and secular when it comes to music? Or is that a loaded question?
Well, I mean, I think it's a fair question. I would say no when it comes to music.
Okay.
Lyrics may be a totally different ball game, because then we're talking, you know, word of God stuff.
Right, right.
But, you know, music itself, I think it's a sacred gift from God. God himself, at points in the Old Testament, actually writes songs. You know, God is a songwriter.
Yeah.
Which is very, very, very cool. And his song, we don't know how it sounded, but the words to it, you know, are recorded in the Old Testament. And then you have to look at the Psalms, which are not, as much narrative like his Old Testament songs, where God writes a song in the Old Testament to sing, you know, and he sings basically sort of historical love for Israel, you know, this kind of a thing. But the Psalms do very similar narrative type things, and they're messianic in their nature. Chad Bird is really good about, you know, reminding us of this, that the Psalms are really Jesus's prayers. Even when he talks about his sin, you know, on the cross he became sin who knew no sin, that we might become his righteousness. So the Psalms are really Jesus's prayers, Jesus's songs. So music has a music and the use of melodies and and the Word of God has a very central place in a lot of the Scripture. So in that sense, I would say music itself is obviously something that God uses to help reveal who He is in the Word. But the actual notes, I mean, there's nothing unsacred about any kind of instrument. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more sacred about any kind of instrument.
Right.
You know, there's not really sacred music per se. There's not really technically Christian music, because music can't believe in Jesus and be saved. So, I mean, you know, I know that's semantics.
But there's music that can proclaim the gospel. There's music that...
Yeah, and those are words. Yeah. Those are words that proclaim the gospel.
The notes don't necessarily
Notes, and so there is no sort of style that is, or instrument that is more... appropriate or sacred.
I thought harps were. Oh, well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's decorum, I guess, you know, like our friends at Virtue in the Wasteland are good at talking about. And by the way, Virtue in the Wasteland, a great podcast to listen to, especially if you like intelligent guys talking instead of two geeks like us. We're like the Beavis and Butthead of Virtue in the Wasteland. So not to get too sidetracked, but I mean, you know, there's appropriateness in church settings, I think, for depending on the setting, for styles of music and all that other stuff. But there's a lot of opinion mixed in there too, as there always is with art of any form, you know. And there's criticism. And criticism is part of art culture. You know, you don't make art or music in a vacuum that nobody hears.
Right.
Otherwise, you do. People do.
Yeah.
And they never release it because they're concerned about the criticism.
Right.
So there you go. The criticism plays a role in the fact that they don't show it to anybody. They're afraid of the criticism. And then when you do, when you release art into the public, you know, you're attempting to put something, hopefully, that you see value in, something beautiful, something you see beauty in as the artist, into the world, and you realize that criticism is going to be a part of the culture that you're sending it into.
It's so much easier now for art to be criticized. I mean, if you're putting it out there on the internet, it's so easy to criticize now.
And I don't think it's a negative thing.
Not necessarily,
I think... you know, you can be cruel about somebody because you hate what they're doing.
Right.
But that just kind of, that typically comes across in a sort of jealous way anyway. You know, like when somebody's like overly cruel about someone else's art form, they either hate them because they're famous, or they hate them because they're rich, or they hate them, you know, they're really jealous of them. What's driving that strong of a criticism. But critics are a part of the deal, you know, that can actually, even what you would be considered negative criticism can actually, shine more light on a piece of art and give it more attention. And almost give it, a framework of meaning in some ways. So it's interesting because it all plays a role.
Yeah.
I don't know if that even makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes... I mean, do you even think it's possible to put art out there that pleases everybody? Is that...
I don't... No, I don't think that... I don't... And I don't... think, well, as a songwriter and an artist myself, I don't think pleasing people is the point of art at all.
Okay, explain. Yeah, what do you mean?
I think art is an expression, like I said, of something that you find value in, and a creative form that you find value in, that is a voice for other people to hear and to be impacted by, whether that be offended by, whether that be, you know, make them think, you know, make them feel something, and them being pleased by it is one of many sort of reactions that art can, you know, cause or elicit.
Right.
And so it's too narrow to say, because there's a lot of art that I wouldn't buy or I wouldn't call great, but I see value in, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I wouldn't say like I'm a fan of it.
Right.
But I like that it's being expressed.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
There's a lot of music that I personally am not quote unquote pleased with. I think it sucks. But what I don't want to do is ever discourage someone from expressing that voice of value that they see in whatever form, because it's not a, you're not, you know, as an artist, you have to realize you're not at a destination. You're on a journey. And part of putting out a masterpiece at some point is having a bunch of other artwork that's not a masterpiece, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of the cutting room floor kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so anyway, as it goes with the church, what do you think? Let me ask you, what is the role of music for the church, in the church, both in the congregation's
right.
gathering and
right.
and in the congregation's life?
Right. Well, I think, and I could be totally off. See, I'm not a musician, but it's something I've been thinking about a lot lately. I mean, we call it worship in church normally. Right. If it weren't worship, it'd be more of a concert, which would mean that the people in the audience are the target for the music, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess in worship, we're worshiping who? We're worshiping Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose of worship primarily, I would assume then, is to worship Christ, to proclaim the gospel, to minister to people, probably also too then. Whether or not people get excited about it might be ancillary. Whether or not people, it's their style of music, is definitely ancillary too then. Because I think if those are the purposes, then I've been to churches with very different styles of music, but God was being worshiped, Lord was being worshiped, Christ was being proclaimed, and people were being ministered to, even though it wasn't my style of music that I like. I mean, you don't really tend to get, you know, shoegaze punk music in the church, which is what I would enjoy personally. I've never heard that in worship
yeah.
music, but
right.
You know.
Well, so when you say we call it worship, are you referring to the music, or are you calling
to the time of the service, I guess, but some people call it worship music too, so I guess it could
yeah.
be interchangeable.
See,
yeah.
I would not call it worship. I would
what
not
would you call it?
I would not call the music part
okay.
Like I wouldn't refer to that as worship.
Because the
as
entire service is, isn't it, right?
Well, and your whole life is.
Okay, okay.
I mean,
gotcha.
I mean you're in a constant state of worship
right.
In Christ. I mean,
right.
You're like your vocation is worship.
See, that's
you know,
interesting.
You're it's not just sacred when you go to the church and gather as the
right.
assembly.
See, this is a total theological ramification of the words I use, and I
yeah.
love it. That's why we talk about this stuff.
Well,
yay.
I think it's part of why I can't. I mean, I don't. I understand what people mean when they say worship leader,
right?
But that's a terrible term, in my opinion. I'm not against someone else using it, like,
right?
Because I know what you mean.
But there's theology behind it.
But I think there is theology
yeah.
behind it, and it's
okay.
I'm not okay with that.
I haven't even thought about it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're not, you know, the guy or the girl who is leading a song is not leading worship. If anyone's leading worship, it's Christ.
Right.
If someone's leading the liturgy, it's typically going to be a pastor.
Right.
If someone is preaching a sermon for the hearers in the ear, you know, I mean, that's a pastor is doing that, but we'd like to think it's the Holy Spirit, that Christ,
right.
Christ is being
right.
proclaimed in word and in sacrament. And I don't think the music should be any different than that. So Christ should be being proclaimed to the hearer.
Right.
In the words of the song.
Right.
And so, you know, there can be a person leading music.
Mm-hmm.
There can be a person leading the song. But you'd like to hope that the congregation is a part of that song, you know,
yeah,
and,
okay.
and that they're accompanying the congregation in a way. So I'm not one of these guys that's real obviously freaked out about what kind of instruments or what kind of style
right.
or any of that, because
right.
but I am more a lot more concerned with what it is that's being sung and said.
Exactly.
Because,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
that I do think is, you know, where the rubber hits the road, and it's should be, you know, based on the texts of Scripture, and it should be reflective of our theology.
Yeah.
Because you're hopefully teaching things, and I think that's why it's important to talk about the songs.
Yeah.
You know, to talk about what the songs say. I think it's important to talk about what the liturgy is doing. You know,
yeah.
What confession and absolution means, and why we say the Lord's Prayer, and what the Apostles' Creed means, and what the meal means, and teaching it and saying it to the assembly of congregants as if it's the first time they've ever heard it, because there's a really good chance, well, depending on the context, I guess, that there is someone in there who's never has no idea.
Well, and
what's
I had
on.
That kind of moment coming to Saltthirst, our church, when I first came. Was I've been in the church for, you know, my whole life, yada yada yada. But I finally heard some people explaining confession and absolution.
Right.
Like, oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
Explaining some of the songs. So I get what you're saying. You got to act like there could be anyone in the
yeah,
the first
I think,
time hearing
you know,
it.
There's obviously.
I'm a knucklehead too. I forget things.
Well,
so, you know.
So here the thing. The thing is there's so much misinformation out there in the mm-hmm. world about what it is that Christians believe,
mm-hmm.
and everyone, including, you know, probably even the pastors in most cases, come there with a lot of baggage
mm-hmm.
Of the world, and we need to be teaching in that hour, you know. Obviously, don't hear me say that we don't need to be preaching, proclaiming, you know, giving the gift of Christ. Not just obviously we need to preach Christ. We need to give Christ to people
right.
in word and sacrament.
Right.
But we also need explanation. We
yeah.
need teaching.
Yeah.
And one of the primary roles of the church today is teaching. And it needs to be that. We need to be teaching churches, and we need to be teaching good theology, and our songs need to be reflecting good theology, because
that makes
that's
sense.
How God uses songs,
yeah.
you know, in the Scriptures and in the Word. So, I think if you zoom out from a macro sense,
okay.
What the church, to me, what's missing in the church is... I feel like the church in America, I'll tell you a quick story, and this is fascinating if you've ever gone back and actually looked at artwork from, you know, 500, 600, 700 years ago. I went to
it
London.
Teaches.
Yeah, well, and it's also popular culture artwork was reflect a lot of Christianity
uh-huh.
in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so the church itself was in the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, what the church was teaching was reflected in a lot of art.
Right.
The church, you know, we went to London, and we went to the National Gallery, and you see all these incredible paintings.
Oh, I love that place.
Incredible stuff. And
yeah.
and it's, you know, it's a scene from the Book of Acts.
Yeah.
You know, you know, the road to or Luke, you know, the you know, so Jesus on the road with the two disciples, you know, and you know, all these things reflected in these paintings that are Bible stories, that are narratives in these paintings. And the church, it's not that there's not Christians still doing that kind of a thing.
Right.
But the church has been shown the door by culture, by art, by music. And they've said, go over there and do your little Christian thing in the corner. And the church and the church has said, okay.
Yeah.
And we've gone over there and we
don't do it as well.
We sell our own books and we sell our own music and we sell our own art and we have and it's separate from the conversation in the world. And that's a real shame, not only for the world, because the church has exited the conversation, but it's a shame for the church, because here's what's happening. And we're starting to see, I think, the fruits of this, is that new art, new expression, new new creative ideas is really not, there's no room for it in the church. You know, kids, you know, if all we do is embrace tradition, and there's nothing wrong with tradition, is beautiful. I'm not against tradition, but there is no room for newness in the church. And so what do kids that grow up in the church do? They leave the church to do art. They leave the church to do music.
Right.
They leave the church to do creative things, because if there's no, if the church is not engaged in the culture of art, and the culture of art has disengaged the church, that's a terrible thing both, because the church is such a great place to nurture. And if you can grow up in the church and learn to paint and learn to play an instrument and sing in the choir and do all these things that, and this kind of thing is happening. It's just less common.
Yeah.
And I think it's more narrow, like the type of music, you know. There's no storytelling in the songs.
Parody what's popular instead of,
and it's a consumer related thing of the congregation wants to sing, you know, the newest song. So if you're gonna write anything, write something like the newest song.
Right.
You know, that's what's welcome in the church. And you just did away with, you know, 800 different forms of art by saying this is what we want, you know. I don't have the answer to it.
No,
it's just sort of, I think, my assessment of where
I like where you're coming from. I hadn't thought about some of those things that way, and that
I think it's tough. It's one of those things where it would be beautiful to see the church, because here's the thing, it's unthinkable for us nowadays to think of the church as an explosion of creativity in the world. Like you look at that and you go, the church ain't gonna be explosion of creativity in the world. The church isn't gonna be the center of what new art is coming out. But it was.
It was.
It absolutely was.
For hundreds and hundreds of years. Yeah.
And it no longer is. And we seem to be okay with that.
No, I'm not.
But
I get what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the church in general is not, we're like, we have our tradition and we're exit stage right the conversation completely.
And all those traditions were really avant-garde. A lot of them when they came out.
Yeah.
They were very,
and they were, and they,
pushing
and
the envelope.
They are beautiful, but it doesn't mean that we can't do beautiful things again.
Right.
You know? It's a passionate subject for me, but there it is. A theology is reality, a theology in art, a theology in music, all these things wrapped up together. And so the church doesn't need to let go of that, you know? And you geeks don't need to let go either, because we're going from Jedi Mind Tricks right into This Week in Geek.
C-3PO has got to be the real nerd.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
Darth Vader was a cool character too, although he was the evil one.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Oh, you geeks. Let me just start with an apology. This Week in Geek, it's been 2 weeks.
2 weeks
since you've heard these two geeks talk about This Week in Geek.
What have you done without us?
Yeah, you probably over it by now, but man, we're going to get into it here for the last couple minutes of this episode. We're going to really get into the Game of Thrones finale, the whole season, kind of where we see things standing. James, you saw the episode here about a week ago.
Yeah, I watched it a little late. I was on the road.
I saw it in real time Sunday night. I could not help myself.
I saw spoilers on Facebook. I was like, no.
Oh, I bet that was terrible.
It was terrible.
Well,
but
you know, so
I couldn't have imagined what actually
was. Going this episode, like we talked about the Battle of the Bastards the last time around, I couldn't see how there could be anything but a letdown on this season finale, and then it was not at all. They pulled out
70 minute episode, extra large episode, which
I actually didn't even know that it was that long.
It's like a movie length.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's great.
TV's getting so good.
I always get to like a point in Game of Thrones and I'm like, I feel like it's going to end and I pause it.
To see.
Yeah. To see. Like how much time do I have left? Yeah. Like in the episode, and I remember doing that somewhere along the lines. I think it was may have been when Sir Gregor was let in the room and he took his helmet off. That was kind of a really dark. But anyway, to change the subject, you just saw it a week ago.
Yeah,
tell me your thoughts. You know what happened in the episode? What were you shocked by? What were you?
Oh man, what wasn't I shocked by? So the previous episode, Battle of the Bastards, was like over the top with battle sequences.
Yeah.
This one didn't have battle sequences, but it had explosive things going on.
Yeah, and
to
how
say
about
the least.
The opening scene?
So the opening, 25 minutes at the beginning, and they don't typically do this where they stay in one location in one plot line for that long. So they wrapped up a lot of the King's Landing stuff going on. So there was a coup, basically, where... Cersei,
the wicked queen,
wicked queen, doesn't show up for her trial, but manages to basically destroy the entire tower
with Dragonfire.
Yeah, there was Dragonfire, and we'd heard hints of this Dragonfire being stored under certain places.
Well, it's interesting because Jaime killed the Mad King, to keep him
from doing
that
kind
what
of
his sister
did. Yeah.
And you see a glance at the end of the episode between the two, and it does open the question to is Jaime going to feel like he's more drawn toward the honor side of saying I can't watch
well,
my
that has
I can't
been
be
his
loyal
character
to my
arc.
Sister,
yeah.
you know, if she's going to be this way, but but it's his sister who he's dementedly, twistedly in love with, and has had children with, and so it's really a...
Well, and those children are all gone now, because Tommen...
The prophecy came true.
Yeah, Tommen can't seem to live with himself after what his mother did.
No.
And so his mom basically killed all the Tyrells, except for Grandma.
Yeah.
Killed the High Sparrow and all of his little Sparrowlings.
Yeah.
I mean, she took out all of her detractors.
Yeah.
Which, and then it's bookended at the end of the episode with her being crowned. Which is when Jaime gives her that glare. And it seems like everyone there is just...
Let's run down the list of
who
Cersei ridded herself of.
Yeah, so...
The Tyrells.
Tyrells.
Both the brother and the
sister. Brother and
sister. Tyrell.
The dad, Tyrell. He was in there.
Yep.
Who was the Hand of the King.
Yep.
Let's see.
Which, by the way, do you know who the Hand of the Queen is in King's Landing now? Cersei.
Oh, who's her hand?
So the guy that's the maester that
the half maester.
They have his. They have
the hand
on his cloak. So she's made him hand of the queen.
Yeah, and he had or they had the old maester killed.
Right,
Pycelle.
Yep. He's dead.
He's dead.
They knocked him off. All of the faith brotherhood.
Yep,
is
including
gone.
Cersei's nephew, I guess.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Man, all of her enemies.
Yeah, I mean,
but she doesn't realize her real enemy is on the way. The other queen.
That's right. Yeah, and I wonder, does she know?
I
feel like they do know. You know, about rumors about the Dragon Queen.
I'm sure they got rumors, but remember, a lot of the information was coming through the eunuch. And Varys has completely switched sides. He's over with.
Well, and so that brings up the question that I have about the episode. The little bit of I don't know if it's an oversight or if they very intentionally put this in there. But so, you know, what, a couple episodes ago, he left Tyrion.
Yeah.
In where is it? Where the pyramid is? Where
the Slaver's Bay kind of place.
You know, that they're calling the Dragon's Bay now.
Yeah, Dragon's Bay.
Varys leaves Tyrion there, his friend. Yeah. You know, they've got this tightness, there's friendship, which has been cool to see. And he goes to Dorne.
To get allies.
And that's when they show him coming in to convince Tyrell, the Tyrell grandmother, who wants revenge against Cersei now.
Yeah.
But then at the end of the episode, he's already back on the ship coming with the army. He's standing behind Daenerys and Tyrion, and he's on the ship, which either Dorne, that's a terrible oversight by
really.
The story, or
if you look at the map, Dorne is not far from Slaver's Bay, actually.
Okay.
Remember, it's the Narrow Sea.
Okay.
So I guess we're jumping in time. I don't think it would take more than 5 days or so for him to get back to.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, because what I was thinking was, it was going to be a long voyage, and he left his friend there, and you know, and that's the
whole thing.
And so I'm okay with it, like a month passing and all this other stuff. But I mean, there has to be a lot of sort of convincing going on, and then he gets back to the other side, and he's back now. He's back on the ship, and he's riding with, you know, Daenerys on her ship.
Right.
And I just felt like
Yeah, they need to explain that better. But yeah, so if you look at the map, it's pretty close, and if you were going to land a huge army from Slaver's Bay, the ideal place to land it would be Dorne, and then march north towards King's Landing.
Okay.
So then you don't have to deal with the whole, you know, invasion from the sea, if you will. So if you had an ally in Dorne, that would be absolutely ideal,
because
you can hop over there real quick.
Because
they've got that. Yeah.
Well, in analyzing the, it looks like if you analyze the fleet that they have, there's actually banners from Dorne.
From Dorne, and their style of ships, too.
And they have the Ironborn ships, the Slaver ships, and they have...
We're jumping in time, so not only did they ally with Dorne, but Varys brought back a fleet to help with the numbers
That's what I'm saying. So Varys would have had to bring an entire fleet back.
Right.
So they are jumping quite a far ahead in time. So maybe they'll go back and tell a backstory somewhere in there, which will just frustrate me because it'll be like wasting a couple episodes.
Forward.
We already know they're on the way, you know. But anyway, we're really down in the weeds now because that's how you geek out right there.
Yeah.
You get into the
banners
that are on the sails.
All right, let's talk Arya now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Arya is, she also somehow makes the trip over to the Seven Kingdoms fairly quickly, I guess. We don't know what the time is. And she is the servant girl that kept staring at Jaime at the phrase at the Twin Tower, Two Towers or whatever. And takes out Walder Frey and his sons.
Yeah.
Feeds those sons to him in a meat
pie. She's pretty wicked now. Like she's almost to a point where, you know, her character is going down a road where it's hard to not root for her because she's the sweet little Arya Stark, but she's got, I mean, that, you think about, that's some cartel crap to pull on people. I mean, you know, feeding them their kids. And I mean, that's some ruthless stuff there. I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know if your character can come back from that kind of a dark.
The absolute crazy thing is this is a fantasy series, right? There's not much that's happened in it that hasn't happened in history. Even things like that have happened.
Oh, yeah.
It's insane to think about that.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, medieval
history,
holy cow.
Yeah.
Just add in some Dragonfire and Dragons. And
that's
one of the reasons I love this show is it
the
seems far-fetched.
Yeah.
But no,
well,
these are
characters are all so dynamic.
They're so dynamic.
Yeah.
Except for the ones we love to hate.
Yeah.
So I think we were talking the other day.
Well, there's very few.
There's two that I can think of that were like, no reason
Joffrey,
to root for them ever. Joffrey and
Ramsay.
And Ramsay Bolton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think personally, I'm there on Cersei. I mean,
I'm there now too.
You know,
she's the Mad Queen.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably, I mean, everyone was asking the question after Ramsay was killed, who now are we going to hate as bad as them?
Seriously.
I think Cersei in the next season will be the most evil character that they have introduced.
Oh, when she sat down on that throne. Man, yeah. Oh, man.
When she had that glass of wine watching all those people blow up and there was just kind of a like a low-grade smirk on her face. I mean, but anyway, brilliant show, brilliant season.
Yeah. What are we going to talk about now?
I don't know. But
I've got a few things.
I'll tell you what, the this was the payoff season for Game of Thrones.
It was so good.
The payoff season for Game of Thrones.
I can now understand why the next two seasons will be a little shorter and they're going to wrap things up.
Yeah, it won't get any better than this. I mean,
Let's get our big battle. Let's have a nice ending. Leave some threads hanging,
but not too
many. So
let's review, and let's just... I want to hear you say, of this season,
yeah,
is your favorite episode of the whole series in this season? And if so, what is it?
Oh, Battle of the Bastards.
Battle of the Bastards. Hands down. Favorite episode, hands down.
That, and it might be my favorite battle scene. Like medieval style battle scene ever, definitely on television. And
I would tend to agree with that. I don't think
I might have to go back and
watch
some
stuff. It'd
be hard
to make an argument against that. The only one that I would put up there for me personally, because I actually came out of my chair, was the Hold the Door.
That was pretty good.
With
yeah.
the Hodor, because you learned so much about...
This season, so many intense moments.
About Bran being able to go back in time and affect things and...
Oh, speaking of, we did not say R plus L equals J is completely confirmed.
Oh, for sure.
Another great moment
in
this episode. Oh, man.
Right.
Too much to talk about.
Yeah, and so only in Game of Thrones is Rhaegar Targaryen, the most important character, killed off before the series even starts.
So true.
Well, that's it for this week in Geek, and we love you guys, and it's good to be back. James is back from vacation.
Yeah, well rested.
We're not going to have any more gaps in the episodes
here. I hope not,
because
I'm leaving again in a week.
That's all right. That's
we'll
all right.
We'll figure something out.
We'll do a special remote location episode.
There we go.
All right.
I don't have cell phone
See you guys next Friday.